Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Commander Rob Hansen, Nancy Hansen, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's version of Raising Expectations. That's right, you're on the right station, and your computer is naturally tuned to what we hope is the best program you're going to hear all week to encourage and strengthen you and to be with incredibly serious and actually fun people. So I think you're going to enjoy tonight's program particularly because as we go into tonight, we're bringing back one of our favorite people by request. And as we always do, we want to raise your expectations. You know that if you're tuning in for the first time tonight, it's because we want you to be encouraged because we're people of faith. We're people who love our nation, the United States of America, and we're people that believe good things can come when you stay pressing on. So tonight, I want to introduce very quickly to you. Once again, most of you know the family. We're going to give you a chance to talk to them as we go down the road later on. We'll let you call in. But for tonight, we want you to know that our team is the best group of co-hosts you could ever imagine. My life is blessed. I'm Joe Schofield, and these guys are spectacular. First of all, there's Dr. Paul Hall, who is a retired pastor and a non-retired theologian, so he can still cover a lot of good ground for us. Hey, Paul, we got you tonight, bro. All right. My friend for over 50 years, and you're going to love this guy. You know why he's been my friend. And then we also have Commander Rob and Nancy Hansen. Now, Rob was a Top Gun pilot and trainer with a Top Gun. He flew an F-14 Tomcat and protected our nation, served our nation in many ways. And the thing I'm blessed by about Rob is when he retired from there, he began to serve many people, including teaching sixth grade boys and girls in a very special class. I'm impressed with people who think about others and how they can help. Rob, we're so thankful for you. And Nancy does a great job taking care of Rob. So this is a great team. You're going to enjoy
it. It gets me out of jail.
That's right. So, folks, we want you to be family. You can see already we're extremely serious and very, very proper. So, as somebody said to me once, Rob, get over it because it's going to be a great night and we hope you'll enjoy our time together. And also we have as a wonderful part of our team, Dr. Craig and Stephanie Thayer. Now, Craig is a very special trauma surgeon. He's in charge of the trauma department in his hospital. And everybody says Craig is the doctor who not only is a doctor, but has received a call from God. He blesses, he helps to heal, takes care of people. And most of all, the guy's a prayer warrior. He really is on it for things. So, Craig, we appreciate you, brother. We're so glad you're here. And then we also get, this is really great, the love of his life, who also is a wonderful gal. Stephanie is a health and wellness coach. So she will go, like the Bible says, and help you understand who you are, body, soul, and spirit. Get the whole package when you work with Stephanie. She'll help you to understand who she is. And if something goes wrong, then he will step in, Craig, and take care of you. So you're okay. So it's a good deal.
We should call Stephanie doctor too, I think.
I think so.
Well, that's a good idea. Joe, you're a doctor. Paul's a doctor. Craig's a doctor. Let's call Stephanie a doctor too. So we'll all be doctors. I'll even call myself.
I can't last in school that long. I like education, but PhD is not for me.
Yeah. No, just call yourself that. It'll fool people and they won't care.
Well, right? Some doctors I knew, Stephanie, PhD, stood for a phenomenal dud. So you're credible. You do a great job.
No,
so
I thought it was piled higher and deeper.
Exactly.
PhD, exactly.
MD is just more dung.
Yeah. Yeah. BS speaks for itself. MS is more of the same.
Big secret. There you go. All right. Well, as we move right along tonight, we're excited to share, as I say, one of our friends. Now, I hope that you follow. We have a very extensive program. How many of you see what we write and share with you each week on Facebook about our guests? Because tonight, how many of you raise your hands? Oh, there's hundreds of you. Very good. You can take the teacher out of the classroom, but not take the classroom out of the teacher. Okay, so I see those hands. And if as a pastor, Paul and I would say, yes, we see those hands. Okay, right, Paul? Yeah, we see them. So tonight we have with us a fellow who is phenomenal. He covers a lot of ground, and he does it because he not only has a great mind, Ron has a great heart. Ron is a family counselor, a teacher, a national speaker on a variety of subjects, and he works with Man on the Mirror, helping men to become all that we need to be in Christ so that the call he's placed in our lives can help restore, grow, and strengthen families and strengthen young men to grow up. So without any further ado, we want to welcome tonight Ron Greer. So guys, let's give him the formal R&R welcome. Welcome, Ron. We're glad
you're welcome back, Ron, for the third time.
So excited.
I can't snap my thumb.
You're so popular. You're great.
You're the best, Ron. So glad to see you again.
Oh, stop. Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys, man. And it's a joy being back with you. And especially during COVID, joy to be with anybody.
COVID, how's that?
We're still here.
Yeah. You're not even wearing masks.
No, I've been a rebellious one since the beginning. A lot of trouble so far, but hey. Oh, Lord. I'm sorry.
Ron, you were talking today about COVID some and shared a couple experiences. What you were sharing with some people where you spoke last, I think it'd be great to share some of that with the folks tonight and go into that and just let everybody ask questions. I know we're going to have some great questions tonight, so I'd love to share that.
Well, again, it's been from the day one it started. I've been one of those folk who eyebrows raised when they first talked about this new virus. I was an EMT for 23 years and an ER tech for a number of those years as well. And I remember back in about mid-90s, just before I left the fire department, this coronavirus starting then, I think it was NL63 or something like that. And of course, you know, later on down the line, you get MERS and SARS-1 and on and go, wait a minute, why is this what's new about it? I'm thinking, okay, it's a weaponized virus or something. It has to be something new or different. And as time goes along and I'm digging CDC and WHO and John Hopkins, I'm reading and digging through and I can't find anything. I'm going, this makes no sense to me. Somebody help me. And out of all the stuff I've read and listened to people, mm-hmm. I'm going, it doesn't make sense. You know, why are we doing this for a virus? We don't do it for the flu. We don't do it for the cold. I mean, what is going on? And then you start reading things like the World Economic Forum and listening to certain politicians, and you go, wait a minute, what? So COVID has become this amazing tool and weapon, I would say, to use against us. But what I spoke of last Saturday was primarily my deep concern from the beginning of how the church just folded. And that caused me some great concern. But what also caused me great concern is that, you know, I'm a child of the 60s. So I remember, you know, the Black Power movement. And I was one of the young Panther youth back in the day, you know, waiting for the revolution to come. the whole anti-war deal. But, you know, and I remember the riots, right, of 67, 68, when literally it felt like the entire country was on fire. I mean, there were like 130, 125 cities burning at the same time and riots every night. The National Guard the command post was set across the street in by the school we live behind. So we got a chance to hang out and play on their Jeeps every day and touch their machine guns. And then
machine guns, oh no.
Yeah, they had a couple of Jeeps there with machine gun mounted on them, you know. And
but at the same time,
we were good information gatherers also, though. We did the command center and we talked to our pro-Panther friends later on and got to explain the stuff we heard. But, you know, so at the time, though, we had to put Soul Brother in our windows so they wouldn't firebomb our house and business and so forth. But, you know, even with all that, you knew that there were things, the tensions were high, and you knew that things could go awry. And quite frankly, some of us wanted to go awry. But what was always there was my parents' generation. You know, my parents knew nothing about my involvement with the Panther Youth. They knew nothing about what I did. They worked all day, and we did our stuff a day and away from the house because they wouldn't stand for it. And most of the pastors and churches at the time, they were more in line with Martin Luther King. So they were another sort of equalizing force. And then you had government officials who wouldn't go along with it, and neither were the cops. So you had all these different sort of balancing and checks around to keep this thing from going off the rails. What I spoke to the group about last week was, what causes me concern is that you don't have those anymore. We don't have the checks and balances. We don't have those balancing forces, because now politicians and church leaders and community organizers and radicals everywhere, everybody is in on this thing. And COVID became this perfect tool. All those folks to come together and go, all right, we don't care if you know. We know that you know, but we don't care. And we're doing this anyway. And now you have world leaders publicly proclaiming that, okay, you know, COVID-19 is the very thing we need to do this amazing reset, this world economy and a new world order. And they're not shy about it anymore. And my concern is the one element that should be there in the public square to say no further, and we're going to push back, are silent. Absolutely silent. And that's the church. I go back to the 60s again. I go back to the mid or late 70s, where the church was in the forefront of the civil rights movement. You know, after the civil rights movement come, the Black Awareness Movement come, Malcolm X, our brother, wants to kind of start a radical movement. The church was there saying no. You know, they move up to the late 70s, and all of a sudden, you know, middle 70s, rather early 70s, the whole Vietnam anti-war movement started, and the church is kind of backing up. So each one of those little things, they backed up a little more, to the point now where we are silent inside our churches. And no matter what's going on outside, there's no pushback. And more so than that, now you have churches, especially urban churches, and now spreading throughout, where the radical, the movement themselves, are based in churches. We just elected a U.S. senator with a pastor of one of those churches, absolute radical socialists. And you go, wait a minute, what's going on here? Who stops this? So that's caused a great concern to me. And now you have, you know, at one point you go, you got a National Guard and the military. So if things really go off the rail, okay, we can count on them. And now the entire leadership has changed. And now you have this whole radical, you know, searching out anybody who might be conservative or who might be a supremacist. And now they want to root them out. And not only that, now you have them indoctrinating soldiers and sailors and Marines with all the new critical race theory and on and on. One of the young men I meet with weekly, who was a National Guardsman, Washington, his deployment to Washington, D.C. was last straw. He's leaving the military now because it's changed. And now I'm saying, hey, we're in trouble. We're in deep trouble. I don't think there's anybody who's in the know, at least. I would disagree with that. And if nothing drastic doesn't change over the next couple of years, I don't think that it's a coincidence that the United States isn't mentioned in prophecy. It either means that we don't exist anymore, or we're completely irrelevant.
Yeah. I think it's sad that Martin Luther King spoke way back when about having a colorblind society.
Yeah.
And in the last year or two, we've been a very color focused society, and nobody's learned the lesson of Martin Luther King.
Well,
that's what's really tragic to me.
Yeah. Well, then you have people who learn the lesson and then they dismiss and hid the lesson. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't serve the narrative.
Yeah.
If you listen to, and I'd say this has been going on for the last, well, 4-8 years of Barack Obama and, mm-hmm. and those BLM all last year and Antifa, okay, well, what's the point? Well, you divide people based on their particulars, and then you create enemies between those people. If people are divided, you can rule them. If people are divided, you can push your agenda, and no one's there united to stop it. So it's a wickedness going on in our country. And Martin Luther King is, you know, no one of 20, 30, or 40 years old know anything about Martin Luther King. They know the image that's been created by leftists and radicals. Mm-hmm. That is not the Martin Luther King that the world knew back then. He'd be rejected right now, and a bunch of others like it. Well, you look at people like Thomas Sowell and Larry Elder and Woodson and those guys. Mm-hmm. People who were around and who, you know, got there, learned during that period of time, they're outcasts now. They're complete outcasts.
Oh, yeah.
They don't fit their radical agenda.
No.
I have a question, Ron. How would you... In the most ideal situation, how would you see the church respond?
Glad you asked that question. Well, again, here's the thing that seems, I know, sort of otherworldly and just completely off out of left field, right? The thing I encourage pastors to do is, like, get out of your churches. Go out to the streets. Go out to the city council member. You should be standing on the legislative floor in the state legislatures. You should be there having somebody in Washington. Your voice should be heard like it was back in the 50s and the 60s and 70s. I mean, I remember elections. Our church was one of the largest churches in the Midwest at the time, largest black churches. And if you wanted to get elected anywhere in Milwaukee County, Milwaukee area, you're going to come to Greater Galilee. And they had certain little signs and little signals sort of that we understood who was being chosen, who wasn't. And our pastor wasn't a guy who was just always at church on Sunday. You know, there are certain meetings and certain things happen in the community. E.B. Phillips was there saying, no, this is not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And why did they listen to him? Because you got 1,500 members who are now associated and connected with another few thousand people. And mm-hmm. he said, no, it meant no, it's not going to happen.
But
that's the problem. We don't have pastors who are willing to go out and go, hey, this is not going to happen. We're not doing this. You know, we're inside our church buildings asking mm-hmm. people to bring people in so they can come and be a part of us. Why? You know, I talk to young people that 18, 19, 20 year olds who have no use for Christianity or church at all. Mm-hmm. They're looking for some integrity and purpose and a number of those things, and they're not finding them. What they're finding is routine and rituals and things that don't mean much to them at all. It's empty. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they're looking other places to find it. Mm-hmm. So I think the ideal thing for pastors to do is get out of your churches, get into the community. One of the things that I'll give a plug for Prestonwood here, back when the city council of Dallas in the middle of the night, or Plano rather, the middle of the night passed the bathroom bill in December, right toward the Christmas break. There was only one pastor there. No one else heard about it. And when that pastor came forward and talked about what they had done, Crestonwood is one of those churches that engaged, invited a bunch of pastors together. I was at a meeting, there were 50 different pastors from churches around, and said, no, we have to stop this. They had a voter drive there in the church. They had there were two seats coming open on the city council. They said, okay, fine, we're going to be involved. And one of the two seats were filled by a member of Prestonwood. Not only that, two state representatives were elected from Prestonwood. The guy who's the attorney general now, who was a state senator, is also the Sunday school teacher of Prestonwood. His wife, who's the senator now, was also a longtime member of Prestonwood. Right. And now you have all these legislators. I'm going, that's what the church should be doing. Why should we allow pagans to create public policy that damage and harm people? Why? That's not what God called us to. When the church is engaged, people are blessed. They enjoy kingdom principles and the benefits. You know, they can hear the gospel. Mm-hmm. When we withdraw, they are oppressed. They're attacked, and there's no hope for them. So I said, get out of your churches, engage. And now, in order to do that, there are two things required. Number one, a commitment to engage no matter what. But in order to commit, one must be willing to sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And I mean sacrifice all. If you're not willing to sacrifice your acceptance, your livelihood, your possessions, and even your life, there's no stopping this. None. Mm-hmm. There's no way anywhere you can stop it. It's only when the people of God are willing to stand and sacrifice and lose. Mm-hmm. That's the only time it's going to stop. It's the only way we can stop.
That's interesting. Go ahead,
Tank. I was just going to say that Satan loves to attack the thing you hold the most valuable.
Absolutely. That's right.
And that, for us, is God. And so that attack is going on, and I agree. We need to be bold.
Yes.
We need to reconcile with cultures.
Yes.
I just got done with a really good book by Latasha Morrison. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read it, but it's Being the Bridge.
It's fabulous.
Culture was neglected in high school. She just goes through kind of her own personal experience with being a Black woman. So it's an amazing book. So strongly recommend it. But I think, healing begins with recognition that there was a problem and then moving on from there.
So, and coming together. And what they want is any way that we can be divided, anything. And you said that, like, of the groups that are going out. And if you actually stop and have a conversation with someone, even that you think you're quite different, you're going to find you're more common than you are different. But instead, if there's never a conversation, you're just yelling at each other, right?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and it's one of the frightening things also is even the ability to have the conversations now with my nieces and nephews, even my son's friends who've known me all their lives. Yeah, they've been so indoctrinated and so conditioned that you can't even have the conversation with them. But if you, that's the trick is finding a common thing, a common thread, a common ground, and being willing to have that conversation, regardless of how it may go at the time. I can recall, a number of situations where. Four or five years down the line, someone wants to talk to me because of a conversation we had at the time. I'm going, wasn't you the guy trying to take my head off? But because I didn't react, I didn't back down, and I continued on. Somehow God used that to plant the seed there. I can't mention names, but there's a young woman who is a Facebook friend still. She was one of the youth leaders in the church with our teenage sons. Well, the guy she's married to, her husband, a fundraiser for a big, large university, he thought I was the biggest idiot and hateful monk or anywhere. And we met one time, unbeknownst to him, and we had a number of conversations, and he just wouldn't budge, wouldn't participate, fine. But I still treated him like I would treat anybody else. Years later, we met at a men's retreat. He had become a Christian and explained to me what sort of opened the door to him coming to know Christ. Because that hateful hate monger that he met and finally met wasn't the hate monger. He was sincere. And it goes on and on. When I lost my job at the fire department, the prosecutor, the city prosecutor, who was an absolute monster toward me, but the entire, that whole 3-year battle, I never screamed, I never yelled, I never marched. I simply displayed Christ to them. I never backed down, but I never screamed, never argued. And even during court, when he was doing the prosecution, I sat in my table and I doodled. I wrote letters. My lawyer was upset, but hey. And this guy tried every single thing he could to go after me. And I wouldn't respond. 3 years later, I get a call from him asking if I'd be willing to meet with him. Sure. He took me to dinner and I walked in the restaurant and I see him and there's something drastically wrong. His face is drooping on one side. His jacket is about 3 sizes too small because he's lost probably 40, 50 pounds and he's leaning to one side. Well, we go in and we sit And I start asking him about his life, how things are going. He's divorced. He's lost his house. He's lost his job as a prosecutor. He's now doing some pro bono work and some volunteer work for two different law firms. On all kinds of horrible things happened in his life. And I'm going, and I'm, my idea is, why are we, what do you want? I didn't say that, but I want to know. And he says to me something to the fact that doing the hearing and the trial, I went after you with everything. And I was on and on, right? He says, why didn't you respond? And I went again.
Because it was about attack.
What God had done, what God had did in my life, and blah, 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 on and on. He said, okay, that's that God thing, though. I don't understand that. So I said, okay. We talked a little more about my faith, how I came to faith, and my hatred, and what God did, on and on and on. And then when he got done with it all, he sat there. He says, I still don't get it. But it's something to that. It's something to it.
Ron, when we were talking today, I got to throw this in.
Sorry.
You know, no, that's perfect. What you were just saying, I think all of us at one time or another have been in that spot. And you talk about the integrity. That's a key word. And we were sharing today, brother. And that's one of the things we respect about you. They came back in Matthew 5:37. Jesus said it clear. And then in James 5:12, James said, who's my kind of guy, because James is forever saying help. That really is where I am. But, you know, we talk about, but, you know, James is the one who really brought up. Jesus said very simply what you just did and what we need to do as churches to be able to have the testimony. Let your yes be yes. Let your no be no. In fact, he says right here in James, but above all things, brother, don't swear either by heaven or earth or any other oath. No, just get off that stuff. And in other words, don't argue. It says to me, like you just said, don't argue because they don't want to hear the argument anyway. Right. He said very simply, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Why? So that you may not fall under condemnation. Let's put it where we live today. Very simply, people will believe what you say and how you live. And Ron, your testimony there is an example to me of what Jesus and James is saying right there to us. They listen to you later because you lived it in the former difficult time. And wouldn't it be something to turn on the news some night and actually know that what we're seeing is integritous and truthful?
Yes, absolutely.
Where does somebody turn, Ron? The church has got to be the answer, like you said.
Yes, yes. And you know, and that's, I talked about the you know, the young people, Gen Zs or whatever called now. And then some of the younger 20, 30. That's the problem with them. The church doesn't seem authentic to them. Christians don't seem authentic to them because it's like we say one thing, but they see our lifestyle and see our reactions and they go, nah, they're not buying it. And we're losing that ground. Now, whereas the other side, they say what they say, and they passionately believe what they believe. And kids go, okay, well, that sounds right. I mean, I feel like this person is really sincere and that no. So we need to be that other, the same thing on the other side there. The same thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they said to you, I don't get what he's saying. I don't believe really what he's saying, but the guy's honest. And so, hey, I got to give him credit. And later.
He's passionate.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
It's like my nephew, we had this conversation. I said, well, are they like the BLM? They're passionate about, okay, but they're passionately wrong? Or they're passionately right? Which one?
Yeah, but at least they're Maoists, right?
Right. Yeah.
Very really passionate about. Okay.
Yeah. One of the co-founders just bought a $1.9 million house in the Hollywood Hills somewhere.
Well, passionate about the American dream, you know.
Private property and capitalism.
Yeah.
That's right. About as Marxist as you can get, right?
Yeah. Right.
Makes sense.
Green Marxist, and I'm living in a neighborhood.
Well, it's right for me, but not for thee. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because again, it's one of. I posted a meme like that I couldn't resist. But again, it's race hustling and radical. It's always been lucrative business. And,
sure,
and yes. Now more so than ever. It's like, okay, you sell hatred, you can make a lot of money. If you sell victimhood, you can make a lot of money.
Should we name names, Ron?
No.
Okay, I know. We know who they are.
Absolutely. You get someone who's been for 45, 35, 40 years, you know, okay, we still haven't arrived, but you're a multimillionaire. Why?
How did that
arrive? It makes no sense at all. None. It's just like
that.
Rob brought a great guy in. Rob, remember when you brought in, do we want to use names? No, I thought it was a great thing. When you brought in Evan Sayer, and Evan has such a great point that he made, and we were talking about this, where Paul, you brought the question up. You said, well, we see all these things and people don't want to hear it. What do we do about it? And Evan came back. Remember, he said, what do? We don't burn down buildings. We don't destroy. We don't do this, that, and the other. They know that we have a biblical Judeo-Christian ethic that we stand by. And like Ron, you were saying, the church, we stand on that. So they know they can push to that limit. But Ron, address that maybe. At this point, it's going to take what you said, everything we've got as a church to stand up and do what's right.
And again, they know where that they can push and that you'll wheel back. I think the moment you say no further and stand firm there, it's when they start to hesitate. And eventually you start walking forward in there and they retreat. But that's the part we have to get to that point, you know, where we're willing to say no. We're not, I mean, nicely, lovingly, but sternly, no. That's wrong. This is wrong. And we're not doing such and such. And I mean, we have to get to that point. As I said, because otherwise it's not going to happen. Matthew 24, Jesus says, you're going to see all this crazy stuff happening. He says, but don't be alarmed, right? And Peter goes on to say, stand firm. Paul tells us, stand firm, right? Know what you believe, stand firm, and then you speak the truth and move forward. That's our it's our best weapon, but also our biggest weakness is not being willing to say, okay, I'm going to accept the hits. I'm going to accept the loss. You know, one of the things that they drilled into your head when we were in boot camp, you get to the point, why are these guys always obsessing with dying here? Because, I mean, everything was death and life or death. You know, you got to be willing to do such and such. You got to keep this in mind. Like, why? Conditioning you to say, okay, you go into a situation, you don't allow your fears and your doubts and everything to overcome you because, this is dangerous and you might die, but you need to be willing to die because the cause behind you is a whole lot more important than you dying in front of you. I think the church needs to go back to its biblical roots and find that same courage and that same thing. The scripture tells us over and over again. And again, I see COVID as another sort of tool God has used, or is using rather, to kind of refine the church, refine his church. I just do. It's thinning the herd, because I have no doubt that I think we're under judgment, awaiting wrath, but I do think we're under judgment. And part of that judgment is this sort of blindness, this lack of discernment, and the cowardice. That has gripped us. Where now, one of my pastor friends, tell him, why are you sifting wheat in the cave? If God is so great and you love him so much, why are you in the cave sifting wheat? Why aren't you out there? And he has no answer for it.
No.
I'm going to get out of the cave. Trust the God you say you know. Mm. If you die, you die. If you lose, you lose. God is not going to allow anything to happen to you, anything that he doesn't want to take place. Mm-hmm. What do you want? You're free.
Yeah. No wind in the cave. The wind of the Holy Spirit's outside the cave. Good point, Ron.
Yeah.
I think another problem, Ron, and everybody, is that, and I saw this in the Lutheran Church and in the many different sects of the Lutheran Church over the last 40 years, there's been a real radicalization, I guess, in the theologic schools, where it's gotten to the point where many ministers actually think that, Jesus was a socialist. And it's based on a misinterpretation and a misunderstanding of what Jesus was really all about. Yes. But they're using that, which is, of course, well, scary in a lot of ways and on many levels, because they're preaching this kind of, postmodern theology to a lot of people that are probably starting to believe it, but they weren't grounded enough to really understand the Bible in the first place. You know, that's one concern that I have. Another one, and this is sort of an upbeat one, in Buckeye, Arizona, which is about 15 miles south of here, there was a Catholic preacher who came out about a month ago, and it's on YouTube, and he came out and he just blasted Joe Biden for the hypocrisy of his, well, personal position on, you know, abortion and the sanctity of human life. And it was sort of an indictment.
He would not let him take communion in his church.
That's right.
He showed up at the church.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
powerful.
It was all over the media for a while.
Yeah.
For about 2 days. And then, of course, you know,
it disappears.
And they hide it.
But I mean, it was a powerful message. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing I think more churches really need to do is speak truth to power and also stand for what the Bible, Christ, and the gospel is really all about, and call out the hypocrisy and the lies of all those people who are maybe using religion / the Bible church as a cover for whatever nefarious activities they are doing.
Yes.
And that's one thing that, again, it happened kind of close to here that I thought is worth watching. And it's definitely, it was an attention getter. And I was just really happy, even though he was Roman Catholic.
On a lighter note, let us know what you think about immigration.
Or the current status of immigration?
Yes.
Well, again, it's...
In Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
So you have all these, and I think, Joe and I may have touched on it, right? Or I was talking to someone else.
We did today.
That's the scary and sort of more wicked thing, right? That you have this sort of this coming together of a number of different things, right? And they all end up being these tools. And what's the purpose? Whether it's COVID, whether it's this open borders, you go down the line, you listen to any of the progressive left, what do they want to do? You eliminate the Constitution. They want to eliminate the voting laws. They want all these things. They can go. And bottom line is, so in other words, you want to destroy and completely get rid of this republic as we've known it for years. Now, they won't put it in those terms, but by the time they finish explaining it to you, okay, then we won't have this republic if we
That's
do
right.
those things.
Well, That's right.
I'll go back to, again, the 60s. How do you get a city government to kind of bow down to you?
Mm-hmm.
You overwhelm them.
Mm-hmm.
Overwhelm them where they're too busy fighting on different fronts and trying to do too much till you wear them thin. And then finally go, wait. Okay, let's just back up. Because now you're going to run out of money or you're going to run out of support. And then once you get to that point, you go, okay, now this is our demand. Now, people say that I'm crazy. I will challenge you to go to Detroit, go to Milwaukee, go to major urban areas in Baltimore, pick one. And I'll guarantee you that's what happened back in the 70s and the and middle and late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
They bowed down because of the overwhelming influx of different radical groups and ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so if you can do it on a city level, why can't you do it on a national level?
So you want to go down to the border and start taking pictures of these old cages everybody's in, but they're pods.
But say it again.
They used to be cages, now they're pods, but they're wrapped up like little baked potatoes and they're cellophane, you know, and it's like, but it's okay now, but it wasn't okay a year ago or 2 years ago.
Under a previous
administration.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when we finally do, I would predict, when we finally do get the mainstream media to start focusing on the border.
Well, they're not allowed to go there. They're not allowed to take pictures.
Yeah. I think this is going to happen, but it will be presented in a sympathetic way.
Yeah.
Where it's designed to get people to heartstrings attached and buy into bring in umpteen millions of folks because they're children. I mean, it's for the children. You know, you can't just leave them there. You can't just ignore them. It's for the children. So we need $13 billion for this. We need $86 billion for this and a billion here and billion there. And finally, you got a few trillion dollars. That's okay, right. What happens there? Well, you need more money from corporations, more money from taxpayers to do these great things. We have to take care of them. So you get 30 million, you have 40 million influx in. Where are they going to live? Mostly in poor urban areas and poor areas where they need multiple services. And eventually what you end up doing is basically collapsing.
They get them, and it's all bought and paid for by the American taxpayer. And now we're putting them in hotels and sending them in places where the infrastructure and the places they're being sent to aren't even available. But the American taxpayer is paying for hotel rooms, free medical care, free education, free stuff, welfare, and nobody seems to be batting an eyebrow, least of all the media.
Again, because we have to take care of these poor people. We have to take care of them.
Foot border.
But we have to take care of them. They're being brutalized and killed from where they're from. So they have to flee here, and we have to keep take care of them. So in essence, what you end up doing is overwhelming the system and causing it to either collapse, literally, or completely transform it. Where now your taxes go higher, business taxes go higher, their prices go higher. For instance, one of the things I try to get black Democrats to do, if you're so in favor of illegal aliens, open borders, tell me where they're going to live. They're not living in the suburbs. They can't afford it. They're not living in the upscale neighborhood. They can't afford it. They live right in your neighborhood. And tell me what jobs they're going to take. You're in an urban, low-income area. Most likely you're working a regular blue-collar job or an unskilled job. Who's going to take those jobs? I'm not paying you $18, $19 bucks an hour when I can pay somebody $10 bucks an hour.
Or
and
less.
Come and do it gladly. Now, that very thing happens right here in McKinney, Texas. We live in a major developer. He has about 42 developments around here. Area's exploding. This is our sixth development we've lived in since we've been here. And I can tell anyone, you can go to every single crew around this 600,000 home area when they're building, and you will find one out of 30 or 40 that speaks English.
Yeah, that's right.
So if my nephew tried to get him to come with his construction business here because all the booming going on, he can't find any contracts because no one's willing to pay him what he normally accustomed to getting. So if he's willing to pay work for half of what he normally does, he can find work. If he doesn't, he can't. What? Out of all those people who are building around, I spent hours and hours talking to them, right? I haven't met a single one in the last year that's a legal resident, not a single one. And they live 6 to a house. They live 10 to a house. They send money back to Mexico, back to Guatemala, on and on. I have a guy, I did a yard sale, who comes around, they drive the yard sales, and on garbage, they drive around, they pick up bicycles and other stuff. And what they do, once
every quarter,
he drives back to Mexico and supplies his family and friends there.
That's right.
Because America's this place, hey, it's open, and it's okay. But at the same time, each one of them qualify for all sorts of social services. And they take full advantage of it.
Yeah.
So, okay, so I'm trying to explain to my friends, my relatives, the jobs, the housing, and the economy is going to impact it most are in your neighborhoods first. You're going to lose. So why all of a sudden would you support such a thing? But all in all, I go back to my 1960s mindset. So you want to completely overwhelm the tax system, the governmental system, the social service system, and then what do you get? The government now has to come in and overpower at heavy-handedly rescue the country, take care of everybody. And I think COVID, we proved in COVID, give everybody money. Why? Because we destroyed your businesses. We destroyed your job. We're going to give you money, though. Be happy.
George.
Again, it's not just a theoretical thing. We see stages of it happening already.
As of right now, New York State pays 14 to right at 15,000 per illegal alien, and that is without the latest influx, like Nancy said, coming across the border now.
Yes.
You know, how can you sustain that, and for how long, especially unless they get it from Washington? It's not going to work.
Yes, and they're going to. They've already, since this thing started, the COVID thing started, every state even though New York included, then the hands out to the federal government, you've got to help us. We have this problem. And you've, and of course, you've had federal judges. On the, when Trump tried to say, no, no more federal funds, the federal judge said, no, can't do that. You got to give it to them.
Even oh, it's infrastructure. It's yeah. important infrastructure.
Oh, infrastructure. You got to give money to the police, even though they're not arresting people. You got to give money to cities, even though they're not assisting federal government. You got to give money to Portland, even though they're attacking the federal building. That Portland won't help, won't do anything, but you got to give them money.
Yeah, don't get me started on New York State. I live there, so I know.
I'm sorry, Nancy.
That's yeah, a whole other. That's a whole other program right there. I'll
tell you. But again, I'll go back to our, in my mind, again. As I told my group, I haven't been this anxious or felt this much angst since my childhood in the 60s. And even then, maybe I was too young, but I wasn't as anxious about the darkness then as I am now. And maybe I didn't know any better, maybe. I don't know. But yeah. but now, though, on one hand, I have this angst about how horrible things can quickly get and may get. But on the other hand, I keep seeing all these things that scripture has already said is going to happen over and over again. You know, the Bible, it's extraordinary how you can talk about a worldwide currency back when there was, you know, they didn't have a currency. Who knows it other than God? How many thousand years ago the prophet, the guy writes that? And here we are. You have world leaders all over talking about a worldwide economy, right? And a cashless, cardless system. Who knows it other but God?
That's here, right. Amen.
We're living it. I mean, I can remember, you know, back as 15, 20-year-old, someone talks about, well, you know, you won't be able to buy and travel unless you get permission to get the mark of the beast. And going, yeah.
Lindsay.
All of a sudden, that's not so far-fetched anymore.
No.
You don't have a vaccine card? You can't travel. You can't get on the train. Right. You can't get on the bus. You can't get on the train. And some hotels going, you can't stay in a hotel. So you can't travel, you can't stay certain places. Oh, you don't have a vaccine card? Oh, you know, well, we don't have, our customers must have a vaccine card. Otherwise, you got to go to the window and pay with your Apple phone. Oh, we don't take cash anymore. Now, again, not just theory. We have a full super Walmart 3 miles from here. They've taken out all of their cash stands. All 14 of them are gone. Why? Self-checkout and card or phone, pay by your phone.
Yes.
You don't have a phone, you don't have a card? You can't shop here.
I'd like to say something about the self-checkout too. I refuse to use it because every time I go see a teller, it's a chance to talk to a human. Yes. It's also a human's job. Yes. And that machine drives me crazy, but yes. I want to see a friendly face.
Yes. Amen. And they say yes. No.
Yes,
well,
I know.
I have a solution.
That means a human relationship. Unifying people.
Yeah.
I found out today, and I had to go to Fry's because, well, gee, we were low on beer. So I bought beer at Fry's.
You go through self-checkout, sir.
I went to the self-checkout, but when you do that,
no.
A lady from who's managing, I guess, the self-checkout place has to come over and verify your age, verify your, your legal to buy beer. Right. And so, in a way, even though Stephanie's right, there is one or two people that still has to come back and verify that you're old enough to buy beer. Okay, so we may be eliminating a lot of checkout jobs, but there's still going to be a couple folks that are still going to have to be there to verify that you can actually buy adult beverages.
Well, here's a challenge for you. Downtown in North Dallas, most of the apartment, they have these high-rise apartments now. Apartments upstairs, businesses downstairs. Mm-hmm. I worked on a committee with a guy who's a chef. He owns 5 restaurants. His restaurant, they're cutting their capacity in the main dining room down like in half. Not because of COVID, because the people in that area don't like coming to the restaurant, sit down and eat. They do DoorDash. They do Uber Eats, right?
Oh, well, okay.
Well, his friend there had a grocery store, a market. And he realized he couldn't make enough money to pay people to run it. So what you do, there's nobody there other than a camera. So you walk in, you pick up your items, whatever you want, and you walk to the door. It's kind of like a metal detector thing there. You hold your phone out, and it goes ching, ching, and you walk out. And you're on camera. Your phone is already registered with that store, which is why you can shop there. There are no people there. People come in the morning to stock the shelves. They come to do. They got to do. They do inventory. They leave.
Wow,
it's already happening. We have a fast food restaurant, a McDonald's, down near Prestonwood, Joe.
Wow. But
they decided that they don't want any more people working in the restaurant other than people cooking in the back. So you go, you drive around, stop at a screen, punch in what you want, drive on the other side of the window. One person comes to the door and hands it out to you. There's no hide. There's no human contact.
There's that $15 minimum wage thing kicking in, right? Taking the place of, people.
Mm-hmm. Because
you wish for.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's, guys, I'm going to have to jump in because I hate to say this, but we're looking at time. We have so much time. I know so much to share. It's about 4 minutes. I'm going to push this. We have 1 minute. Who wants to fire a question or a thought?
Paul. Dr. Paul.
Ron, can you?
1 minute, man.
Can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Ron. You're a special breed of cat. I'm a child of the 60s as well, so a lot of changes and things like that. I don't want to be presumptuous, but I sure would like to invite you back because I think it's important, it's imperative that we talk about the church. We talk about the body of Christ.
Yes.
There are some things I'd just like to probe your brain, like to hear what you have to say. I have always had incredible respect for our military, yes. for the medical profession, and for the church. Having said that, I was watching a show the other night, Gutfield, and he's kind of fun to watch sometimes.
Oh, he's very fun.
He had a guest who was a retired staff sergeant. From the Marine Corps, both legs were missing. And they were asking him about, a general question about the military. And he said one of his greatest fears now is that those young men and women who are volunteering their lives to go fight for something are seriously questioning, do we have something worth fighting for?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As a country. And so I'd like to pursue if you'll be gracious and come back with us. I'd like to pursue that whole idea that, the church has, in my opinion, after 55 years of pastoring, we've relinquished it a little bit at a time, just a little bit of time until that relinquishment has become the norm. I'd also like for you to think about this the next time you come back. And I'm just going to throw this out. One of the things you mentioned before your first time was the feminization of the church and how the church has softened its message to where the men who come into the church, they wrestle with what it means to be a man anyway. Yes. So to define what it means to be a godly man, how do godly men pick up the mantle, carry the mantle that God has placed on them and be what God has called them to be. So,
all right, guys.
Questions.
We got to jump. I got 54 seconds. Ron, we got to get you back.
Right,
definitely have to bring you back, brother. And
need a commercial real quick?
Guys, we have, I don't have time for a commercial either. I'm going to miss the commercial. But if you would, Nancy, hey, guys, listen, we need you to go to our website. Because I got just a few seconds. There's one, guys. We also need you to, if you would, go to our website. Let's try our website, guys. And what an incredible sign. bbsradio.com/raising expectations. Folks, we're going to bring you some great things and great discussions. We could use your financial help. Make a donation. Help us to help you. Help us to get the word out there. Help us to bring guys like Ron Greer to you. And we get comments from as far away as Pakistan. So we really want you to join in with us. We've run out of time. Ron, God bless you, brother. We're so glad you'd be here with us. And we bless you and your family. And from our hearts to yours, thank you for who you are and what you stand for. You definitely are one of those who says when his yes means yes and his no means no. That's what we want to be. And that's what we want to show. Right, folks?
So, a man of integrity. Yeah. We love you, Ron.
Amen. Love you, Ron. Okay, brother. We'll see you next time. And remember, next week, folks, same time, same station. Yeah, we'll get you next time. Check it back in. Raising Expectations. We hope you'll be with us. bbsradio.com/raising expectations. We'll look forward to having you with us again. Watch this program throughout the week. Hear what was discussed hour after hour. You can tune into our website and catch this program all week long. So don't miss out. Thanks so much. Thanks, Ron. DJ or TJ? I'm DJ. You're TJ. Okay, TJ, take us out. And thanks, brother, for helping us. We love you guys at BBS.
All right, bless you. Great to see you, Ron.
Appreciate it.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556. Or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.